Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. We're also on BitChute and YouTube. You find the links in the podcast description. I'm also a podcasting coach, and I got four other podcasts: Meditation, Awakening, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with Solutions, the Lauren Polish, and the Crypto. You'll find everything on bio.link/podcaster. My guest today, also a podcaster of five from what I could see. He's a serial entrepreneur and he's a speaker. Please welcome Ben Albert.
Excited to be here, Roy. You do a lot of things. I'm impressed, and I'm blessed to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation because I've seen a lot of stuff that you're doing yourself in the marketing side that I don't think everybody else is doing, but you might let the listeners know. Who's Ben?
Yeah, I joke that I ask questions for a living, and there's more two main categories, two lanes where I get to ask a lot of questions. I have a podcast myself, similar to you. I actually host 5 to 6 different shows, but they're all on the Real Business Connections Network, where it's all about asking questions and extracting the best insight from brilliant guests. And then on the other end, I've got Balbert Marketing, which is my marketing firm, where I'm all about not providing a square peg round hole solution and asking the right questions to get to the real problems and implementing great solutions. So again, I joke, I get to ask questions for a living.
Excellent. So I'd like to delve into the podcasting first, but what I want to do prior to that is your speaking journey. You know, Ben, as a young boy, what was your kind of journey to getting comfortable speaking?
It's funny because a lot of your listeners, I know some of them might be up and coming speakers. A lot of them are probably way better speakers than I am, and I'm humble enough to know that. I literally never imagined I'd be a speaker, a podcaster. Honestly, I hardly even opened my mouth the first 13 years of my life. Was a quiet kid. And it was funny because I was the quiet kid and I was kind of reclusive, but I wanted to be a basketball player. And all I did day and night was play basketball. I had a jersey for every single day of the week, but I never hit the growth spurt. So I was the shortest kid in school, shortest boy, second shortest person behind a little girl named Olivia Lee, and was quiet, short, small. What do you think happens? You get bullied, you get pushed around, you get picked on. And I actually got really good at making myself smaller, trying to hide from the noise, trying to just like not be the center of attention. So I only give that aspect of my story that it blows my mind that I'm a podcaster and a speaker and I do virtual trainings and all that stuff, because I barely spoke. Literally 13 years of my life, the first time I spoke like seriously in public was in my bar mitzvah. And on my bar mitzvah, I was literally talking for an hour in front of like 100 people, and I'm crackling in my voice and I'm sweating and got the armpit sweats. And through the love of curiosity, through the love of learning, through honestly what I've learned was a bit of a chip on my shoulder, feeling small, feeling like I didn't belong, feeling like I wanted to grow. I feel like the growth mentality, the curiosity, and the love of learning got me into the space of podcasting. And by podcasting, I became a speaker just in alignment with the fact I'm a podcaster. I speak a lot, but never was there any Tony Robbins or Brene Browns on my wall. Never was there a thought that I'd be a speaker one day. And I tell that story humbly to know that there's better speakers that listen to this, but there's also people that are just getting started or feel like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. I didn't know what I was doing either. But I learned it over time. And that's a little bit about what brought me here today.
Excellent. And like you mentioned about being bullied when you're small, like I'm 6 foot now, but when I was younger, my mom is 5'4". I started growing when I was 18, which is strange. I don't know why it happened, but my mom is 5'4". I have a picture of a wedding when I was 17 and I'm up to her shoulder. So like, and I had fights constantly. It's amazing how people bully the small guys. Like I ended up doing all martial arts and everything and ended up fighting too much, which is a bad thing to do. But So you mentioned the bar mitzvah. That's a Jewish thing. I've heard it a lot of times, but I don't know nothing about it. You might explain, because there's probably some of the listeners that don't know what exactly it entails.
Yeah, so a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah is the feminine version. When you turn 13, that's when you are officially accepted in as a man or a woman. Very young, but you're 13. And there's a lot of self-study from ages like 4 or 5 when you start going to Hebrew school, learn how to, you know, learn about the holidays, learn how to read Hebrew. And the thing about Hebrew is there's something called the Torah. The Torah is the Old Testament. It's this big scroll. And the way Hebrew is written is they have an alphabet. They have consonants. And then the vowels. I don't know why I couldn't remember the word vowel. There's consonants, and the vowels usually are written under the consonants. But in a Torah, there is no vowels. All of that's just gone. So it's hard to read. So you spend a lot of time self-study. And the second end of it is you're supposed to sing it in a certain way. So I didn't really, actually, when it comes to tonality and speaking and practice, I guess I was learning this. I didn't realize it. We would highlight different words with different colors. At least this is how I was trained. So when I went up, I knew how to sing it through the practice. So it's kind of a big deal. Depending on the community you're in and who's training you and your family, it can be as simple as just throwing a party and saying a couple words. But they had me reading out of a Torah that doesn't have vowels, singing, and and it was like an hour-long show, which mostly I ran. Thank you for bringing that up, because I never realized it. That training was preparing me for who I am today. Talk about exposure therapy and putting yourself in a scenario that makes you uncomfortable.
Especially at 13, like 13 is an age that you're kind of worried about everything.
You made me realize, I'm going to tell that story better next time, because you made me realize how important that specific moment really was.
Brilliant. So the podcasting, because like I've got the 5 podcasts, but they're all separate, which in turn has advantages and disadvantages. It's like 5 separate marketing things that I have to put everywhere. And yeah, like social media is, some people get it, some people don't, some work for me. But I see you're very good on LinkedIn. But I'm just curious, was that something that you had planned to keep them in the one? And what do you find the advantages of doing it that way?
Yeah, and we can go deep into the journey. I'll give you the super broad strokes. When COVID hit and I was furloughed, I was doing video production. And just for all those,
because that's
United
kind
States.
Of an American thing. Oh, yeah. Furloughed is like where they just say goodbye. Yeah, your job is parked, but they really mean goodbye. Yeah, would I be correct in that analysis?
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't even know what the word furloughed was when it happened to me. So I started using the word probably like to bring, but I don't. Simply put, you're not fired for poor behavior, but something like a pandemic hits. We are doing video production with a lot of travel. There was no in person. There was no travel. There was no video production. There was no sales. So I wasn't fired for bad behavior per se. I was just let go based on budget cuts. And that's kind of what a furlough is. It's not like you're fired, you're bad, but it's like we had some budget cuts and we had to let you go kind of thing.
I'm just curious as well, because I know that with a lot of the countries and the way they do things, they have ways of, because sometimes when they let you go, they have to give you like redundancy, which is like depending on the amount of years. When you're furloughed, does that kind of, that goes out the window, or were they still kind of giving people redundancies? And
it's a good question. I don't know exactly how it works in most scenarios. I it's the first time it had happened to me. It's if you were to go in a job interview, it's not the worst thing to mention if you can explain the reasoning of being let go. I'm not a job strategist, but it's funny because I was trying to find a job during the midst of the pandemic and nothing was landing. So I started my podcast because I decided, let's start a marketing firm, because I understand marketing. I've been doing it for a long time. And all I really need is what's on my laptop, anyways. And I had read some books and I had thought about entrepreneurship, but I had never really dived in. So I decided, let's dive in. And a side note is, I had a music podcast that I started in 2016. So I was already for some years into hosting that show. So I knew the power of conversations, podcasting, marketing, et cetera, et cetera. So at the same time I started my marketing firm, I started a Rochester, New York. I'm from Rochester, New York, in the United States. So I wrote a, I started a Rochester, New York business podcast. Simply two main reasons. I wanted to learn from Rochester, New York business people, and my target market was Rochester, New York business people. So I was getting in the door and having conversations with brilliant people that possibly could work with me. And I guess the third major reason on top of it is, I wanted to go local because I was a minnow in an ocean of sameness, that I couldn't just start a podcast and get attention. You do great, but I may be imposter syndrome. I'm gonna start in the smallest market possible, get some momentum here. Once Rochester Business gained momentum, later on we rebranded to Real Business Connections and started launching new shows. But all of the shows are about business and personal growth. So I'm not in as many categories as maybe you and many people are. They're all around business and personal growth. But as you know, people consume information different ways. So we have short form, we have long form, we have monologues with just me, we have monologues with other people, we have the Rochester local interviews, and then we have national and international interviews. So I said I'd keep it short, but that is still the broad strokes. Real Business Connections once was a local show. Now it's international, but it's all around business and personal growth. So the categories aren't as sporadic as they could be, because it's all basically the same kind of topics.
No, and to be honest with you, what you did at the start was right, because it's trying to find the right niche. Because sometimes people say, oh, my audience is everyone. You knew, hey, I want to get customers here. And by doing that, you were specific to that area. And if someone's doing a Google search on the area, there's a good chance you come up, as opposed to, internationally. Like, so that was good. So what I've seen as well is, have you always been on SoundCloud? Because I'm on Podbean and I'm on Anchor, and I've seen a load of the different ones, but I rarely come across somebody that's, I know you can put it on SoundCloud, but the actual host being SoundCloud. So I'd like to, were you always on SoundCloud, and can you see pros and cons with using SoundCloud?
Yeah, so I mean, you're a podcast coach. You would probably be able to go over the pros and cons of every specific platform better than me. SoundCloud is not the best platform. It's not the most cost efficient. It doesn't look the best in the feed. Like, some of the links aren't clickable. Like, I'm not a fan of SoundCloud, but I started my podcast in 2016 with a music. I started local with the music. It was called Rochester Groovecast, and it was highlighting local creatives in the music industry in my city. SoundCloud at that time was a very popular underground music platform. So I went to it for the familiarity, and I continued on it simply because of the familiarity, but I wouldn't recommend that as the best option. That said, if it's familiar and it works and it gets you doing something that you might not have done, do it. But if I were to turn back time and give someone advice, it wouldn't be SoundCloud. But hey, Music Guy podcast plopped it up and been using them for 7 years. So they made some good money off me, and I'm sure they're happy that I'm on their platform. So
No,
no
I mean,
complaints from
and that's
either of
why I
us.
like asking people, because I mean, there's no way deep down. You can do research and you can check the different things, but it's when someone's using. But I presume you're aware that with the RSS feed, you can move it to some. Because I saw the links weren't working with some of the things, like the Google thing, and I mean, that can happen
Oh,
with, yeah. So, but
good to know.
yeah, so you can actually move it to somewhere else that will have all the different links, and you're not going to lose your audience, and your numbers will continue and everything. So it's something to just consider.
I know you're correct, and I tried once but got analysis paralysis and never did it. But possibly what I'll do is take a break. It's another side note. Like, I put out multiple episodes a week. I like to take at least one break a year where I go on a short hiatus, let people know where I'm going to disappear. Maybe I need to take a short break and do that. So thanks for kicking me in the butt to maybe get that done.
But it's not kicking in the butt because I know you're on the top of the charts as well. You're doing very good, and it's like it's interesting for me because it's something I can tell people, hey, you don't have to do what I'm doing, because like where we're delving next is the marketing, because you are actually fantastic in the marketing. And like we can touch on all the different ones, but I suppose the most important one that I've seen, I know I'm not doing it right. I've done my LinkedIn profile, I believe, decent enough because I've got a bit of help. Somebody was on my show and kind of helped me out on that. And but I know my posts are kind of like maybe one or two comments. I do comment on it, but I see you've got brilliant interactions with your posts. And I've looked at some of the stuff that you do because you're actually helping people as well with some of the posts. So I suppose let's delve a bit into the LinkedIn, because I think it's probably one of your where you feel a lot of results are coming from.
Anything specific? Because I feel like we could write a book on this kind of
Exactly. Well, I
thing.
suppose let's talk about posting, because I put out a post. I mean, I know that before I used to share the thing, and then somebody said, no, you actually need to write something with what you're sharing. But I see the engagement. Sometimes it's like if a guest is on and they make a comment, and it because you're tagging them, maybe 10 comments, but sometimes there's nothing, to be honest. And other times it doesn't get much more than that. But I see a load of. Like there was one or two that I saw with yours. It was like in the 600 and odd, and there's a lot of them are high up, even 80 or whatever. That's still a lot. And I suppose, what way are you doing it that's actually giving you a brilliant interaction with the people that are actually seeing the message, and how it gets a bit more viral than mine just kind of disappearing into the ether with me seeing it.
Yeah, there's a couple of things we could talk about. Values and content. We'll maybe do that in a second. We can even talk about support groups. We'll possibly do that in the second, but what you're talking about specifically, like some of these posts that went not super like, oh my God, viral, but top 0.01% compared to most posts, like hundreds of comments and likes and this and that. Almost every one of them, and the algorithm's changed a little bit where it's not quite as effective as it used to be. Almost every one of them, if not every single one of them, is a collaboration with someone with greater clout and a larger following than I have. So, for example, Richard van de Bloom, I think he's Netherlands or Norway. He puts out a literal year-long 60-page or so algorithm report where LinkedIn doesn't release the algorithm, but Richard's team has many, many clients and partners with many, many researchers to put together, hundreds of thousands, maybe not hundreds of thousands, but lots of data on LinkedIn, hundreds of thousands of posts to put together an algorithm report based on what worked all year long. And since he creates this report, and I'm a marketer and I'm a content marketer with graphic designer on my team, I get permission from Richard. Hey, can we take this report? It's very extensive. Can we turn it into micro content, short images, infographics, maybe a couple slides where we can, get this report out to more people in a very digestible way? And they're obviously like, sure, tag me and use my hashtag as well. So we create that partnership and do just that. I go through the report, turn it into smaller graphics, tag Richard, and it doesn't work quite as well as it did a year ago, but it still works. If you tag somebody, especially on LinkedIn, better than any other platform, it organically shows the post on their feed, especially if they join the conversation. So, for example, if I tag 50 people and none of them respond, LinkedIn's going to be like, you're a spammer. No one cares. Bye bye. But if I tag one person, add their hashtag, and then they engage on the post, it's going to disseminate that information to their network. So that's one micro example. But with the podcast is another larger example. I'm bringing people on, and I don't, not everyone who I bring on has a big LinkedIn following, but I usually try to double check, are these people active on social media? So when I have a podcast episode, I have a system to let them know when it's going live. I send them an email, I send them a text, and I DM them the link once it's posted on the social platform, just to be like, hey, look, this is live, this is live, this is live. So I tag somebody, then they reply, and then the algorithm benefits both of us. So there's mutual benefit here. You and I came together to record something new. It's never been done before. Maybe I've been on podcasts, but I've never had this conversation. So it's brand new, authentic, done on the spot. We did this together. Let's get as many people listening and watching it as possible, seeing the even just a quote. Like, I like creating quote graphics for people that aren't going to listen to a podcast. Let's tag each other, let's interact with each other, and then we'll reach both of our audiences rather than in scenarios that I'm sure you've seen. You share it, they don't, or even worse, they ghost you, and then their audience doesn't really come your way. It's a small little just ad lib, and then I'll shut up. Some of my most popular episodes aren't my best episodes, but they're the episodes that oftentimes the person hasn't been on many shows, but they have a lot of friends and neighbors, and then they share the show on all the platforms, and then it outperforms the super great expert that never shared, all because of the collaboration. So the one sentence version is the way I get my post to go popular is by collaborating with people that honestly are bigger than me, but adding value to their network and then joining a thought leadership role in their network. Does that all make sense?
No, it's absolutely. And I mean, it's something I've been doing from the start. I've realized, like that you tag the person, and I have it in my form as well to make sure, because, and it's never happened, but I've heard of people that they don't want to be tagged about. So I have it in my form. So I know straight away, hey, where would you like to be shared? Because sometimes maybe somebody wants it on, say, LinkedIn, but not on something else. They might want to keep their Facebook to their, personal and stuff like that, which is all good. And like, what you're saying, I mean, I've had some very famous people on, especially The Awakening. I mean, I've had like David Icke, Mickey Willis, loads of really top people. My most popular on the speaking podcast was a 16-year-old who basically was a beatboxer, and he started joining Toastmasters under his father's name because he couldn't be, you have to be 18 to be in Toastmasters. And I just was so impressed with him, and I connected with him, and I was helping him as he, so I got him on the show. And that has more downloads now because he done it the way, he was sharing it and everything. And I do what you would mention, I send it out, I give the links. Look, it's on audio here, video, BitChute, YouTube, Rumble, whatever it is. And some people get it and they comment and they make, and I comment back, and then it gets shared more, way more. But there's others, as you say, ghosts. It's like you hear the crickets, and like it's actually they're hurting themselves because you're trying to promote them as well. It works both ways because when they make a comment, my audience sees it. And it's not a case of me just trying to take. This is a thing that we're both trying to cross promote and build our audience. And like, just because they've got a list of maybe 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, it doesn't mean that they have buyers, but my interview might make the person trust them more. And by having it there, they might just get around to listening to that and go, wow, I love what he just said, and go away and start buying from the person. So when people kind of get it, it's helping both. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't understand that.
It's meant to be mutual. A lot of people go on like hundreds of podcasts a year, and that's often too much, especially if it's not the right podcast. But let's use David Icke as a just simple example. David Icke probably charges $50,000 for a keynote. You can have one-to-one time with him for cheap to free. I don't know if he charges to be on a show.
Honestly,
It's
I
free.
like him. He basically, I just wrote out and he came on my show. I've had people that like, because we do five podcasters, we do a kind of freedom broadcasters, we do live shows with a lot of people. And there's people that when that we reached out, they were looking for a fee. We just don't do that. It's something I don't do personally. It's like, that's not what you're doing. Like, but he was free. And also, he was very generous in his time because sometimes you've probably experienced that yourself. There's people, they do the podcasting circuit. They're in and they're, oh, goodbye. They don't even, like you're barely saying goodbye to your audience. Like, and they don't even kind of acknowledge what you've just gone through or just have a little chit chat. They're gone. Whereas he stayed on. I had him on my own show. Plus, I brought him onto the live one. He stayed on chatting away. Wow. When you know he could, you know, claim massive amounts on a keynote, you appreciate that, like.
You do, and that's why we're talking about him right now and then possibly endorsing him and showing people his work. So there is value in over-delivering for people, and that's like a whole side point. In conjunction with that, yeah, you can charge $50,000 for a keynote. You spend the time for free. I hope people are listening like, oh my God, I need to start a podcast. But beside the point, if David Icke didn't share the show, I would not be mad, because I still got to spend time with him. But in scenarios, this is for anybody who wants to get on podcasts and you aren't David Icke and you're not a big name guest just yet. If you're not sharing the show, you're actually leaving a sore taste in people's mouths, that if you want to get to a level where people, you don't have to share the show and people are just like dying for your time anyways, if you want to even have that a consideration, you need to do the little things to get you there, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But if David Icke came on my show, I wouldn't be like, you didn't share. I'd be like, thank you for your time. I would have probably paid for it. And you gave me one-on-one time for an hour. Oh my God, this is cool.
He actually on his platform, because that's something that we do as well. And I started doing it myself, because with the live ones, when we're doing the live, we actually send it to them as well. They can put it on. Sometimes what they do is they put the link to one of our videos, you know, as normally whoever brought the guest on. And it'll just go directly from their thing, or they'll send out an email list, which is brilliant as well, if they actually blast it out. And it all helps. Like, you know, there's just, I don't know, it's just by caring. But one I'm doing myself, and it, you know, might help for yourself as well, and for our podcasters, is I say, hey, do you want this record? I like to do it a couple of weeks later, because you don't want that they're putting it up and you're kind of competing. After the first, I mean, they say 6 weeks is the main kind of download, but the reality is it's kind of 2 weeks is the kind of the big burst. And why not share? Because most of the times they're going to tag you anyway, and they're putting it up. And plus, like, they're seeing you. So, you know, if you had this video, they're seeing me and they go, I like his style, or vice versa. You know, if I was on your show and it's not that you're going to, I'm not going to listen to you no more. I'm going to listen to him instead, because they're totally different. And it's like when people kind of get that, so that means I can be on, you know, in 5,000 places instead of just on my own platforms. And all you're going to do is benefit yourself.
Couldn't agree more. It's a beautiful thing.
No, so I know that you do talk about like networking, and I saw one there.
Yeah.
You mentioned about network tongue tied and the CAN system, CAN. Yeah. You might let me know, what's the CAN system?
It's funny, because I explained it without going through the acronym, because I was trying to get rid of some of the fluff. The concept of there's lots of C's, but it's create and network, content and network, collaborate and network. A lot of people show up to networking events thinking, how can I find a new client? Or a little better, but not great, how can I talk about my dog to somebody? And nothing really happens. I already kind of explained, kind of an introverted, quiet person. I'm not the life of the party, jumping up, throwing around, you know, glasses. It's just not my personality. Maybe that's a limiting belief, but other people are more charismatic than me. That's just the truth. So when I go into networking events, I like to go in with an intention. And my intention as a marketer and a content creator is, how can I create content and collaborate while I network? So instead of just handing out business cards, this is a great example. Figure out who's going to be a good fit for a podcast and have them on your show. Figure out who would be a good fit for the charity you help with and see if they want to be a volunteer. See if someone wants to co-host an event. Maybe I'm a marketer, but I don't do video production. I'm going to go and try to find a video producer that I can collaborate with, create with, network with, so I can add that service to me by outsourcing it or referring it over to them. So when you create, collaborate, connect, and network, content and networking, community and networking, networking is not just for the sake of networking. It's the sake of building something valuable above yourselves and with compound interest the two of you can reach and help more people than just one. I'm a firm believer we shouldn't do anything. There's certain things like wipe our butt, but we shouldn't do many things alone. Certain things, I guess it's okay to do alone. But if you're trying to build yourself out as a speaker, as a podcaster, as a marketer, as a business professional, or you just work with a charity and you want to rally the troops for a big event, why not collaborate, create, connect, create content while you network? And I get very in the weeds when I do hour-long presentations. But I already gave a great example. Someone already created a 50-page, 60-page LinkedIn report. How can I collaborate with you to bring value and create content with you to get that out to more people? Or let's say there's a new restaurant and you're a photographer. And as a you're a brand new freelance photographer and you're trying to get in more doors and take more photos. Maybe you take pictures of that brand new restaurant for free. Build your portfolio, get their agreement to share those photos once they go live. Then you both collaborate, they reach more people, you get the clout of a new, you were the one who took the pictures. And then when you go to restaurant B, C, and D, you can use restaurant A as your example. But that wouldn't have been possible if you were just taking photos and posting them to your own account. It's only possible because you decided to collaborate intentionally with the second party to make that possible.
No, excellent, excellent advice.
That's everything I do. Literally nothing I do is rocket science. It's who do I want to help and who can help me get there? That's all it is. Who do I want to help? Who can help me get there? Let's get in the door with the person that can help me get there so I can help those people that need me.
And the thing with a lot of these events, they tend to give out a list of who's attending, or they'll create a Facebook group or something where all the members go into. So you actually can go away and do your homework and research the different people and go, oh, Ben would be a good match for me. He's doing this, this, this. And when you put it on your radar, there's a good chance of meeting. But some people, they don't do that. They just go in there and it's kind of like, you know, shooting the breeze. And the reality is, you know, to be more intentional about what you want.
Yeah, I'll give a simple example. Let's say you go to a live event with lots of speakers. What you would do is you would possibly even reach out to the speakers beforehand and say, really excited to see you at this event, love your topic, et cetera, et cetera. And if you forget to do it, you can still do it after the event. So three things. Do it before the event if you can. There's already a speaker list. Reach out to every single one of them. Then at the event, take notes at the presentations that you go to. Reach out to them afterwards and say, I love what you said about A, B, and C. And if you didn't see a speaker, you can still reach out to them and say something like, Roy, I missed you at this event because, you know, as you know, there's so much going on. I'm bummed I missed your speech on blank. Where can I learn more about it? And that's just seeding a conversation. That's creating a bridge. Depending on who the event, who you are, what you're trying to accomplish, how you can help, it's going to look different. But that'll get you in the door to at least get a hello or a follow back or permission to make an ask. In my case, it's, I'd love to have you on my podcast, but you need to get permission to make that ask. And you do so by these little nuanced things that only take 45 seconds. Hey, Roy, I saw you spoke at this event. Here's three takeaways I wrote down. Now Roy and I can be friends.
And that's all fantastic advice. And some people might think, oh, too many people do that, they'll be bombarded. But people don't do that. There's very tiny fraction. I mean, I was talking about podcasting at a Mindvalley event and, you know, I got a great review from it and everything. But it was like just people coming up to me in the days afterwards just saying, but very few that actually write. And I know that's kind of general. Very few will actually do that. And what you just said is fantastic advice.
This hasn't happened to me, but I've heard other speakers tell me that they'll give their phone number out. Live audience, 10,000 people. Here is my phone number. Less than 10 people will call. So what happens if you're in that 10? Do you think you get their attention? Do you know Jason Mark Campbell? Selling with Love.
No.
Oh, I only asked because he used to run a large division at Mindvalley. He has his own podcast called Selling with Love. I'd be
Oh, so
happy to make
Jason
an
Campbell. Yeah, when
intro.
you said Mark, I was thinking it was somebody else.
Oh,
So,
I threw you off with Mark. Yeah.
yeah.
So Jason Campbell, he just came to mind. That the way I met him is I reached out and said, "Hey, I love your podcast." That's how I met him. Like, it's that simple.
Oh, no, brilliant, brilliant. So with other kind of marketing then,
Yeah.
like, because there's something like organic versus paid, and I'd like to know your kind of call on that one.
Yeah, so I don't have a background in paid, so I can give 101 broad strokes, but my opinion on paid is if you actually know what you're doing or working with a company that's really good, simple. You put in 100 and make 200. Aren't you going to put in 1,000 and make 2,000? Like, paid is brilliant, but a lot of paid marketing doesn't work for a lot of different reasons, and that's why I stay away from paid and keep that for the direct, like, specialists. So paid aside, organic is better long term. If you're building a brand, if you're building fans, if you're building not people that aren't buying now, paid, let's use Google as an example. I can show up first page of Google for almost anything I want if I have enough money. Let's just assume I don't have that kind of $100,000 a month budget, or some of these companies might even be putting $1 million a month into paid marketing. I don't have that kind of money. Wouldn't you like to come up first organically? Now, I can't guarantee, no one can guarantee you're going to come up first for very specific searches, but wouldn't you like to slowly work your way to the top where you can invest your money in something that's going to be sustainable long term? When paid, the moment you turn the paid off, bye bye. Not in every context, but that's my, I'm being biased because I don't do paid. But organic builds that long-term relationship. Let me give you a simple example. You set up a profile, you run paid ads on Instagram, you make a bunch of sales. As soon as the paid ads turn off, you don't have any followers. No one's actually following your Instagram. Wouldn't you want people to actually be there scrolling your feed? You can't get that done without good long-term reps to build organic, love with your audience. You can use paid to get their attention, but the only way you're going to keep that attention is through the organic stuff.
And like what I've kind of, I tried to go as much organic as I can, and I've played with just different businesses I've had over the years. But what I've learned is once you start paying, your organic growth stops because they want you to keep paying.
You're
You know, it's like,
the product. You're the reason
yeah,
they
exactly.
you're the, you're how they make their money. Let's be real.
Yeah, so they stop it going and they just keep sending you the promotions to try to keep getting you going again. Like,
Dude, it's funny. It's I joke about it, but re realistically, like Google, Facebook, Instagram, name the account, it's completely free. You are the reason they make money. And the higher the competition, the more they can charge. So this is a ridiculous example. I just know this through marketing. If you want to do roof repair or certain things in very large cities, it's very expensive to show up at the top. And it only gets more expensive the more people come to the table wanting a piece. So they're just going to keep charging more and more and more. And then as soon as you turn it off, you just got smoked by all the people that have it on. So
yeah, no, it's a strange model, but it's just a, yeah, it's just the way that it works.
it's a money making model. It works, but it's not good for the startup or the sole proprietor or the up and comer. It's really for someone who has a budget,
Yeah,
big one.
absolutely. So I know that you've got a few kind of companies you're doing through the podcast and everything with the personal branding. Like, what's your call on that? Because you can kind of do company, and all the marketing for that. Or put everything through, say, the Ben. What way do you kind of think is the best way of going?
Yeah, I mean, you just nailed it. I whether you're a sole proprietor business, it doesn't matter whether you're self-employed or employed by somebody else. Self-employed, you can pivot and your audience will go with you, unless it's not a, like, if I went from let's talk about growth mentality to let's talk about this super right wing version of politics, be a very hard pivot. I'd lose a lot of the growth mentality listeners. If I'm super right wing in my politics, maybe I make that move and then I find a new audience. That's just an example of hard pivots don't always work. It's the soft pivot where if I go from a web designer to a podcast coach, or if I go from a financial advisor to a real estate agent, these are soft pivots where your audience really won't change. Now, if you're in a company, you become the most poachable, stealable person in that company. One of two things are going to happen. They're either going to want to move you to the top because your personal brand is so valuable to them, or if they don't move you to the top, recruiters and people paying attention are going to try to pay you more money to go to their business because they understand the value of your online personal brand. The third thing, let's say you're not going to be poached, you're already at the top, you're good to go, but I already mentioned this. Let's say you're aligned with a charity, or even worse, someone gets sick and you have to set up a GoFundMe account. What do you think is going to happen if you have an email list, a personal brand, you have listeners? They're going to jump up and they're going to help you. And that would have been impossible if you hadn't already added a ton of value into their lives. So the short version is add a ton of value. And then it doesn't matter how you utilize that goodwill, it will help you in the long run.
Oh, absolutely. And like what you mentioned about kind of pivoting as well, because like your podcasts are all kind of similar, so you were able to put them together. But when I was doing The Awakening, which is exposing fraud and corruption, I realized that there's a load of fraud and corruption in the crypto field. But I knew that by putting that into talking a lot about that, that people that aren't interested in blockchain technology and crypto, I would actually hurt my audience. And that's why I actually created a separate one, because it's like, yeah, if you are interested, you know about it because I cross promote all the time, but I didn't hurt my existing audience by creating a separate entity.
Makes sense. That's difficult. That's a long conversation. How do you create multiple entities without blending too much and having it just kind of like ineffective? You'd have way better feedback than me, but it's a skill to be able to build something, and it's easier to pivot to something similar than it is to crypto, how to be a dad, how to podcast. Like, different categories can be way all over the place in a way.
No, exactly. So with the email marketing then, because it's even something I'm kind of looking at the moment, because I've done it with different businesses, say real estate. I used to have a newsletter and I built a big email list, and it was like kind of a couple of years later, people would buy a property and go, because I don't bombard them. It was like, I think I used to do one a month or something like that. It was kind of fairly decent compared to sometimes like London Real. Even if you unsubscribe 100 times, they'll still send you an email 4 or 5 a day because they do offers at London Real, you know, crypto at London Real. They just create these things which should go against GDPR. But for there's so many different systems. There's like Chipmail, there's MailChimp, and there's hundreds of them. Which is the one that you think is very good? And the other thing is, what's your thoughts on, say, the likes of me? Because kind of you're similar, because you've got the 5 podcasts and a few other things. Do I have to create all the separate lists, or can I just kind of go, hey, on this week on the speaking podcast, we've got Ben, we talk about this. On the Awakening podcast, we talk this, which would be 100 times easier for me, because it's a lot of work when you're creating a newsletter and actually, you know, sending things out.
Yeah. The first, and this is my answer to anything, any move forward's better than no move at all. There's Constant Contact, there's MailChimp. I use MailChimp just, again, out of familiarity. I am a huge fan of deferring to someone with a specialized skill. And I have email marketers in my network that could answer this better than I can. I use MailChimp, and what you can do is, based on how you put together special links, special forms, based on how they found you, they're put in a different category. And then when you put out an email, you can separate based on category. So if there's something, let's just use the GoFundMe. If you have a GoFundMe and you want your entire network to hear it, send it to everybody. If it's something hyper specific that some of your network would be like, this person is sending too much email spam, you can just select those people. The only mistake you can make is not build your list at all. Or the mistake I made is I didn't separate my list. And now that it's larger, I need to separate it because the first, you know, the initial subscribers, it's, I'm all over the place. I've got Rochester, I've got virtual events, I've got in-person events, I've got a podcast, I've got LinkedIn, got a lot of different categories. I need to separate some of my materials. This is a projection, but I like to market and sell the way I like to be marketed and sold to. Little bit of projection because not everyone's like you, but I don't like getting 2 emails a day from somebody unless it's pure value. If you're a speaker, as an example, and you do like a 1 minute bite, an inspirational thing every day and it's value, do it daily. But if you're just trying to sell something multiple times a week, people are going to mark you as spam, unsubscribe. So I very rarely send emails. And when I do, I try to have them be valuable and straight to the point. And then when it comes to organization and large, I don't work with enterprise. If you've got an email list of 100,000 people, hire a direct email consultant to set this up properly, because that email list of 100,000 people is gold. When you're small, just building a list at all is so much better than not taking any action. So don't let MailChimp, Constant Contact, sorting, any of this stuff stop you from getting started. And then when you get started, figure it out from there a little bit. Again, I'm not the perfect expert on it, but that's my general advice on that kind of thing.
Brilliant. And finally, but it's important, there's going to be kind of maybe a bit deeper, because we discussed it before we started recording about having 2 cameras. And it's something that I'm very interested in. And it's because whether somebody's doing a YouTube channel or a podcast or, you know, it's just even Zoom calls, whatever, a webinar. Let's touch on that, because it sounded fascinating to have a different camera as well as just the one that we're looking at straight away.
Yeah, we were joking before we clicked record. And what's more fascinating is this camera to the right of me actually timed out twice. So it's currently not on. So sometimes technology fails you. I need to figure out a way to actually take video without streaming it live. This is a great example. Sometimes you do something and it doesn't go right. So what I do, and this is brand new, by the time this comes out and someone follows me, they'll be able to see this kind of content, is I've got a side view on me anytime I'm speaking, whether it's not when I'm hosting a podcast, because I ask a lot of questions, but anytime I'm on a podcast or speaking, I've got a side view camera on me. I'm curious if you or any of the listeners, I imagine they have, you seen, and I'm sure at least some of the listeners have you seen videos that are kind of coming from that side view?
Yeah.
And it's the front view is, it's good, but let's say you're making bad eye contact or this or that, or the thing that always worked and it still does, and since this isn't working, I'll grab it, is picking up your phone and talking directly to your phone, like, hey, especially if it's an ad, like putting money towards it. Hey, you, I know you're going through something right now. Give me just 1 second. I want to brighten your day. You talk directly to that person. And if you're putting ads to it, you can actually target who you're talking to. But you want to talk directly to a human, because most cases they're on a phone watching you on the phone, and it builds that one-to-one connection, and that's still valuable. What's interesting about the side view is it shows you talking to somebody else. So when it's first person, one-to-one, talking directly to you, that's very personable. It's also been done a million times. The side view allows the viewer to be a peeping Tom. I don't hate to call him a peeping Tom, but they get to be
a fly on the wall.
Yeah, a fly on the wall is a nicer way to do it. But some people are peeping Toms. If you're popular enough, they might want to take you home. But that's beside the point. they can be a fly on the wall and see you have a conversation. So if you speak, you consult, you do anything like that, they can see what it would look like for you to do that with them. So they're a third party looking at you having a conversation. So let's say you have a coaching call. You can jump on the coaching call, click record. Someone asks you a question you've never asked before. You give an answer you've never said before. You just have a content from the side view that shows any listener what it would look like for you to be their coach. And it just provides a different perspective.
Plus that gives
there's no right or wrong
reality as well. If it's coming from here,
yeah,
not looking at the screen, because you know, mm-hmm. that you can remarket for getting more clients.
If it's straight on, it almost kind of even looks like I'm just like scripted. Like if I don't show you or the question, it's just like, hey, today I'm going to talk about 5 marketing tips to double your business today. That's been done a million times. The side view just adds a different perspective. It's more raw. It's more real. I'm in my joggers right now, sweatpants, like people can just see I'm just an ordinary guy working from home. What's funny is I use a green screen. I know the people listening can't see it.
The side I'm just looking down because I usually have joggers, but I don't have the pants.
And I promise my last point, I have a green screen and you can't see it on the Zoom call. Part of why I'm doing it is people can see that I'm just an ordinary guy working from home with a green screen, and that further shows rawness and authenticity. A lot of speakers, a lot of coaches, a lot of everybody, they try to show up to their best all the time, and people don't see the real you. The real me is someone sitting here in my joggers with a green screen that if I were to take down, you'd see a guest room bed. That's just who I am, and I think people appreciate that authenticity.
Oh, excellent. And just like what I have seen is some people doing is they use the different cameras, but it's just like they're just changing the view constantly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like when they're saying something, it's not making sense the way they're doing it. Whereas what you're saying is like, that's just the view from that thing, as in, you know, the fly on the wall or the peeping Tom, whatever it be. Yeah. That makes way more sense. And I think that really works. And just kind of being authentic and seeing exactly who you are, it can only help you.
I know I'm a chatterbox. One tiny thing I want to add to put an exclamation point on it. I can release a video that has the front view with the green screen and then flips over to the side view. So someone picks up their phone and they're like, wow, Ben's got an amazing office. And then it flips to the green screen. It's further building authenticity rather than pretending I'm in this beautiful office. It's like I'm not a psychology expert. I'd love to have a chat with a psychologist because there's certain things going on with human behavior that are very valuable. And it's as simple as just using a third camera, a second camera.
Brilliant. Listen, Ben, you've given fantastic information and tips today.
I want
today.
To go longer with you.
I think we need to get you back. We need to get you back and go in because there's so much to talk about marketing and you've got fantastic tips and everything. So definitely get you back on the show. So you might let people know where they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, so I know you say it at the end, but I want to double down on this. Like, subscribe, share this show, click 5 stars. You don't have to leave a 20-page review. In most apps, just subscribe and 5 stars allows this to organically reach more people. I like to say that because that's the easiest ask ever, and it's already like it's right in front of you. Do it while I talk. When you're done with that, you can find Real Business Connections anywhere you found this. And if you can, I failed you as a marketer and I apologize, but type in Real Business, whether it's the YouTube, the Google, the podcast app, just type in Real Business Connections. You'll find me there. So step one, subscribe. Step two, you can find me wherever you found this. So I don't want to make it complicated.
And when you do find him, make sure you give him a 5-star rating and a review
only
on his podcast.
Like only if you like it.
Because it only helps. If you like it. Yeah, well, if they're still in here listening at this stage, they did like it because they'd have been gone in the first 5 minutes otherwise. So listen, Ben, thanks very much. Totally enjoyed it. I definitely get you back because I think marketing, no matter what you're doing, whether you're a speaker, whether you're a coach, whatever you're doing in life, marketing is number one and people have to realize that. And you've shared so many beautiful tips today that it's only going to help their business. So thank you very much.
Speakers are marketers. They are.
Exactly. So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. We're on BitChute and YouTube. You'll find the links in the podcast description. And you'll find my other podcasts as well as the coaching bio.link/podcaster. I don't need to say give me a 5-star rating. Give me a review because Ben done it already. Until next week, take care.